Real information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin. Up North News with Pat Kreitlow starts now.
Well, here we are, and good morning. Welcome to another beautiful day from our studios on Lake Wissota here in the state of Wisconsin, as we share some headlines and opinions, some guests, a little music, music history, sports, general foolishness on this Tuesday, October 25th. Wait, if it's Tuesday, that means there's only two more weeks left until Election Day. 2 weeks to go. But equally big, it means that today is the start of early voting, early in-person absentee voting. If you don't care to do absentee balloting by mail, this is your chance to just do it yourself, do it now, not have to wait in lines anyplace on Election Day, but actually get in touch with your local clerk's office, find out what hours and days they're doing it, and then go on down. You fill out the ballot same as you would on Election Day. It's the exact same ballot. It's just that you get to get it out of the way early. And then, you know, it's in the safe and secure hands of your local elections clerk to be counted on Election Day with everybody else who has to stand in line or try to get off work early or what have you. So starting today, you can do just that. So there we go. 2 weeks from today. Coming up this morning, Rick Smith. He is not just a radio host who talks up union workers. He is still a Teamsters trucker working the overnight shift. But each evening, he hosts a show on stations across the country, including most of these right here, aimed at spreading the word about what blue-collar workers really need from their elected officials. Rick is taking a break from his trucking job, touring some Midwestern radio affiliates, and he recently spent a day with us in Eau Claire, and we will talk to him live today about his show and his mission. We will also have a new report on how Ron Johnson has avoided paying hundreds of thousands of dollars in state income taxes over the years of his second term as a U.S. Senator. A.J. Bayatpour from WKOW-TV broke that story yesterday, and so we will listen back to his reporting and try to make sense of a particular tax credit. It's way more than a tax credit. It's a big old giveaway. Good morning, Aaron.
Although technically, Pat, we do have to make sure we have all the details correct. It isn't Ron Johnson getting this tax break. It's Ron Johnson's trust fund he set up. He personally is definitely not involved. That's for sure.
Yeah, this is the old corporations are people, trust funds aren't people type of thing. Trust fund set up by Ron Johnson for his family. Are these taxes that should be paid? Yeah. Are they taxes that likely would have been paid by Ron Johnson rather than taxpayers? Yeah. So we're going to get into how this tax credit has become the monster that everybody predicted it was going to become when it was first enacted, not long after Republicans took control of the Wisconsin legislature and Scott Walker became governor. It's given the innocent-sounding name of the Manufacturing and Agriculture Tax Credit when it goes for so much beyond any manufacturing jobs and any family farms. That is a complete misnaming of an overwhelmingly monstrous corporate tax cut that, as we learned, also includes the trust funds of multimillionaires who can skip the taxes that you and I and the rest of us have to pay. If you'd like to get in touch with the show at some point, radio@upnorthnewswi.com, or you can reach us at 715-388-7155. The aforementioned and heard from Aaron Zomers is our producer today, and we'll be happy to take your calls. No real sports to talk about from yesterday, other than to note this quote from Aaron Rodgers that folks are reacting to about the Packers, stinking up the joint recently. And his quote is not the R-E-L-A-X quote, but it's kind of up there, or it's just full-out denial. He says, "I'm not worried about this squad. In fact, this might be the best thing for us. This week, nobody's going to give us a chance going to Buffalo on Sunday Night Football with a chance to get exposed. Shoot, this might be the best thing for us." Well, shoot, Aaron, I know a sports cliche when I hear it, and that is like sports cliche number one. Nobody gave us a chance. Nobody believed in us, you know, as you give that pep talk to yourself. So, yeah, you're trying to be the underdog. You have the underdog cliche. But here's the thing. The Packers aren't just the underdog heading into Buffalo. The Packers are 10.5-point underdogs in Buffalo. Now, I'm not a betting man, but I understand a 10.5-point spread is pretty big. And I understand the significance when I hear that Aaron Rodgers has never been a double-digit underdog in his career. At no point with the Packers have he and his team been underdogs of 10 points or more. And that's how we're going into this game in Buffalo. Now, granted, again, that sounds to me like a whole lot of gambling establishments are trying to, you know, lure bettors in, going, oh, come on, you know the Packers are going to be less than 10. Come on, bet me, which is why I don't bet. But just the notion that that's where the number is set and has never been there should really tell you something about, you know, whether people think the Packers can recover from this or not. And we will find out late on Sunday. So coming up, we are looking to visit with Rick Smith, who has his own weeknight radio show on this and many other stations about blue collar workers in Wisconsin and across the state. That's after this. You're up north. Talk to Rick Smith this hour, a truck driver turned radio talk show host and a show that he does nationwide that helps out blue-collar workers and, frankly, working-class families all over Wisconsin and the country. First, while you probably heard your local forecast on your radio station here, let's look at weather all around the state. And it's a split picture because of a system that is still moving through. Here on the western side of the state, things are nice and sunny. We're going to have near normal temperatures today and tomorrow, then get a little bit warmer for the rest of October. Not summer-like temperatures, the National Weather Service tells us, but still quite warm for this time of year later in the week. Meanwhile, over in the eastern half of the state, showers will continue. There will be some drying in the afternoon, but another round of rain could come up in the evening before that system moves on. Bull Falls Radio in Wausau is at 45 degrees right now on its way to 47. Over at Air Support in Oshkosh, you're at 51. You'll have 54 today with showers, but then tomorrow, sunny and 52. Richland Center, 49. And Amory over at Lake Eyre, you have 38 and sunny skies right now. Let me check some of my headlines here. I wanted to, before we get to Rick, cover some of the other things. We talked about Ron Johnson avoiding taxes for his family foundation. We're going to cover that more in depth during the 9 o'clock hour. But I wanted to, Aaron, I wanted to ask you as well, the Florida governor's debate, Ron DeSantis and Charlie Crist. I can't remember if I sent you a note or not. Did you catch that at all or have any highlights on that little gab fest yesterday?
I did not. I can take a look for later, but I don't have anything at the moment.
That's okay. No, it was one of those things I noticed very early this morning, making the coffee that I'm going to come to later as well, I think, given that Charlie Crist, the former now Democrat, who was former governor of Florida, taking on the current Republican governor and doing to him what more people should have done to Scott Walker back in 2014 and hold him to a pledge or at least a straight answer on whether he's going to serve 4 years in office. Will he serve the full four-year term, or is DeSantis already so gung-ho on running for the Republican presidential nomination, whether or not Trump runs, that he can't commit to serving a four-year term as governor? Also tonight in La Crosse, the Main Street Alliance. Well, we've talked to Sean Fedeplace from there previously. They are going to be having a forum in La Crosse tonight for third congressional district candidates. Well, maybe just candidate. You know, we talked to Brad Paff yesterday, and it's been noted that you know, Derek Von Orden has been, you know, just basically too chicken, which is weird for somebody who likes to talk about his military career, to show up for any debates. That hasn't gone unnoticed, even more so by the Dubuque Telegraph Herald in Iowa, which in writing up a summary on the race so far between Brad Paff and Derek Von Orden, has noted that the Telegraph Herald has reached out multiple times to Van Orden's campaign and is not getting any kind of response, whereas, you know, Paff did, and they ran a lot of the answers to the questions that they have. But then they go on to say, quote, numerous news outlets have reported difficulty or inability to get Van Orden to respond or speak to them. The last time he spoke to the Telegraph Herald was after a campaign stop in Platteville in late October 2020. His campaign has rarely provided responses to questions. That's the kind of thing you want to see from a newspaper, from news media coverage. Although I would go a step further if I were editor, and that is to actually make that an editor's note, to say to the reader, look, we're about to summarize the 3rd Congressional District race, but you need to know that we don't have any fresh material from one of the candidates because he's not talking to the media. And then I would go on in an editorial to talk about the fact that he will not take part in any debates. Now, he, and I've noticed this from other spokespeople from Republican campaigns, they are all in on this strategy of painting all journalists, all journalism, frankly, as left-wing media. They're treating all of the newsrooms that bring you information every day as what Donald Trump once called the enemy of the state. This is not an attitude that's compatible with democracy. It is not an attitude that is rooted in even a grain of truth. It is a philosophy of people who are afraid of being exposed for whether it's their poor positions, their lack of positions, their lying, their hypocrisy, or their fear. In whatever the case, when you are attacking the press, you're flailing. You're admitting that, you know, you can't answer these questions, or you can't answer them truthfully. And that's exactly what's happening with Derek Van Orden. He's still running the slick ads, looking like the nice guy neighbor next door, you know, who was in the military and rides a motorcycle and wants to do something different. And again, that's going to sit well with people at first blush. And it's obviously it's Brad Paff's job to let more voters know about, you know, his real record of supporting the insurrection, of not, and if not supporting the insurrection outright, then certainly being adjacent to and attending a rally, which was rooted in lies about the 2020 election. And the fact that he has, you know, neither apologized nor backtracked on any of those positions should tell you what Brad Paff is likely claiming, that he doesn't have the judgment or the temperament to represent voters in Western Wisconsin. He is somebody that will throw your vote away if given the chance, just like his potential future colleague, Tom Tiffany, up in the 7th District, willingly voted to throw votes away, votes that were certified and cast in other states, simply because he didn't agree with them. That's as anti-democracy as it gets. And I think a lot of folks would not expect the nice guy next door with the motorcycle from the military to, you know, be in any way, shape, or form supportive of an attempted coup. And so I don't know that Derek Van Orden is going to show up at this event in La Crosse tonight, but it certainly wouldn't surprise me. Aaron, we've got that clip now from Florida. And this, again, you know, Ron DeSantis, we've heard from him so much, and in all the worst ways. I mean, he is so trying to out-Trump Trump and go even more extreme in so many different ways, and in such a callous and, one could argue, you know, un-Christian manner for somebody, you know, people that like to talk about their faith. Their words and actions certainly don't match that. And he's got presidential ambitions. There's no denying that. And when I say no denying it, I mean, He didn't deny it when he was asked about it by his Democratic challenger, former Governor Charlie Crist, in their debate last night.
He was asked directly on if he would serve a four-year term as governor if he wins.
You're running for governor. Why don't you look in the eyes of the people of the state of Florida and say to them, if you're reelected, you will serve a full four-year term as governor. Yes or no?
And what you?
Yes or no?
You're hearing nothing, right?
Will you serve
you're hearing nothing. He's just staring. And then, you know, finally, the moderator on the panel lets him speak, and he gets in a dig at Charlie Crist about Joe Biden, but he never answers the question. He just stares because he knows he can't. He cannot commit to his voters that if you vote for me for a four-year term as governor, I'll hang around for 4 years. And, you know, the question definitely should have been asked more forcefully of Scott Walker. Although in the end, it didn't matter because Scott Walker had the shortest presidential campaign. I mean, Scott Walker was the Liz Truss of presidential campaigns before there was a Liz Truss. I mean, Liz Truss lasted 44 days and Scott Walker's presidential ambitions lasted for 71, I believe. So he lasted almost two Liz Trusses. But that's not, you know, that's not any better. And that's really unfortunate because we should have, at least the, I don't know, courage, bravery, honesty, or whatever from a governor who says, well, yeah, I actually might be thinking about that. Let's see how things go. But yes, people are recruiting me because, and then talk about what makes you so great, you know, in your own mind. And if that's how you want to go, at least then give the voters an honest choice. But that is not the way that it has worked out. Also in the news, there was another school shooting, and I'm only mentioning this one briefly in St. Louis, simply because I couldn't help but note that people were thankful, grateful, relieved, whatever you want to call it, that only two people were shot dead before the gunman was himself, and that it was noted that the school had metal detectors. Police said the doors were locked, that there were armed guards inside the school. Now, consequently, there was a quick response. But again, you're responding to a shooting that is already taking place. Two people are shot and dead. I believe seven others wounded, either by bullets or by shrapnel. And so maybe the problem isn't even more guns. Maybe the problem isn't solved by locking more doors and metal detectors and armed guards. And again, a fast response can never be faster than a bullet. So once again, we have people that, choose, as Gretchen Whitmer said in the Michigan gubernatorial debate, choose the Second Amendment over second graders every time. Obviously, in this case, it's a high school, but, you know, the point still being made that maybe we need to do more. Maybe we can address, you know, what's happening, what is with this flood of guns coming into cities and things that are known as blue states, but they're coming from red states. They're coming from places that have very lax regulations on guns. And yet here in Wisconsin, not only do we not have anybody on the Republican side really speaking out about that, but on promising to keep things as bad or worse. Somebody like Tim Michaels, who not only opposes red flag laws for Wisconsin, by the way, an idea supported by an overwhelming and bipartisan number of Wisconsin residents, but he belittles the notion of red flag laws and casts it as a vehicle for people, most certainly mostly women, to make up accounts of domestic violence as an excuse to, you know, have their husbands or spouses, partners, hunting rifles removed, when it's so rarely, if ever, that that's the case about that. And yet this is what we are forced to deal with. It's that kind of attitude. It's the simplistic attitude about guns. It's the simplistic attitude about abortion, that it's a binary choice, you know, that it's always some kind of an elective choice. There are no simple, all the simple solutions for things like this have been tried. And it's time to think deeper. It's time to be a bit more complex. And it's time to stop believing in politicians who give you simple answers, or in the case of Ron DeSantis, will give you no answer at all to a basic question. We'll be back with more after this. You're Up North.
Wisconsin Conversation, real information. Live from Lake Wissota, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Welcome back. Oh, wait a minute. I'm sorry. That must be my computer is trying to tell me that it's time for this day in history. So as we look back at the old calendar here, it was on this day in 2001. Do you remember Windows XP? Yep, that's when Microsoft, see, you just never know when the computer's going to reboot. You never know what sounds you're going to get next here. I've been, part of the cult of Mac for so long now that some of these sounds are bringing back almost PTSD about what we had to listen to with every error, with every program that opened up, with every error. I can't say that I miss it, but in its day, Windows XP was a pretty big deal. On the music calendar, the Rolling Stones first appeared on the Ed Sullivan Show on this day in 1964. So what would that be? About 8 months after the Beatles' first appearance. Didn't take long before Ed Sullivan had them on. And you know, he'd promised that after the appearance that they'd never be on again. But they were on another 5 times after this first introduction on the show.
Now, because of all of you, we're going to have them in, they're going to have them in both halves of the show. So here's the first appearance of the Rolling Stones.
See, the joy was rocking. There was just so much screaming. So much screaming in 1964 back in the day. On a much more mellow note, Paul Simon's Still Crazy After All These Years album was released, along with the title track where the hits 50 Ways to Leave Your Lover and My Little Town. As you can tell, the Rolling Stones, it ain't. You can go ahead and play the Elton John clip next, Aaron, while I talk over it. That Elton John on this day in 1975, the same day that Paul Simon album was released, played the first of 2 sold-out shows at Dodger Stadium. And I want you to think about that for a second. Selling out Dodger Stadium, that was a very big deal. Obviously, the Beatles had done something similar, you know, at Shea Stadium and others. But, you know, those were a big pair of shows from Elton John back in the day. We're getting a little bit closer to the present day as we move into the 80s. It's Katy Perry's birthday today, born on this day in 1984. So that makes her 40 years old today. Who'd have thunk? So there she is on Hot and Cold and, of course, several other hits that she's had. And in 1986, I just graduated UW-Eau Claire by then, but so we had played some earlier Bon Jovi work, but the Slippery When Wet album came out on this day in 1986 with You Give Love a Bad Name and Living on a Prayer. Eventually, it sold over 8 million copies worldwide. And by the way, on this same day in 1986, for the first time ever, the top 3 spots on the Billboard Top 100 were all held by female solo acts. There was Cyndi Lauper's True Colors, Nina Turner's Typical Male, and Janet Jackson's When I Think of You. So it was 1, 2, and 3 on the pop chart on this day in 1986, the first time that had ever happened. This is Up North News. I'm Pat Kreitlow. It's nice to have you along here. Looking over at what we've been posting on our social media at Up North News, Christina Laurie and Sherita Booker have been working on a wide variety of ways to bring a little bit of, shall we say, levity to the elections, because again, it is so important, and voting early does start today. But they've been looking for various fun facts to share with folks, just to you know, get them in the election spirit. You know, let's think along a more patriotic line, you know, shall we, and have a little fun with voting and get away from some of the present day insanity. So among them, let's see, they note a fun fact. Well, we've talked about this one. In Australia, voting isn't just a right, but it's a requirement. Let's see, here's another one. The first I voted stickers debuted in the late 1980s, intended as a reminder to others to vote. If you've seen Hamilton, you know about this one. Until 1804, the candidate who received the second most votes in a presidential election became the VP. Aaron, I know we'll be seeing Rick Smith here, by the way, in just a second. Also, let's see, voting is mandatory in 22 countries around the world, including Belgium and Brazil. And let's see, the first voting machine was used in 1892. In an election between Grover Cleveland and Benjamin Harrison. And by the way, the Fox News Telegraph Company was lying about the results of those voting machines back in 1892 as well. Little known fact that Fox News had its own telegraph company telegraphing the big lie to everybody. All right, one more time as a reminder that the election is 2 weeks from today, but that early voting is already underway. So if you want to get in touch with your clerk's office to find out when those early voting hours are in your municipality, you can either look up that information yourself or your local clerk, or find it at myvote.wi.gov. And from there, you can not only get your local clerk's contact information, but you can see who exactly is on the ballot, so that you can make an informed choice up and down the ballot. You now have time in the comfort of your own home to, you know, poke around your Google machine and see what you think of the various candidates that are running. You might even find out in many cases that your Republican candidate for legislature didn't take part in any debates or didn't turn in, you know, a questionnaire of sorts that a lot of the newspapers have been asking for. And so we'll find that information on your ballot at myvote.wi.gov. And again, registration information is there as well. And you can register on election day, but there are also deadlines for pre-registration for election day, along with the requirements for registering to vote. And what I mean by that is you hear about voter ID a lot, and an identification is necessary when you're voting. When you're registering, the main thing is proving that you live where, you know, where you're registering. Because when you think about it, voting really is, you know, based on residency. You know, the place where you are, like, you know, right here on Lake Wissota, is in a particular assembly district and a particular state senate district, and a, you know, particular county board district, county lines, congressional district, what have you. So it's that much more important that you have residency established, so that you bring in either like a utility bill or all sorts of other ways to identify yourself. And again, that you can find at the myvote.wi.gov website. Turning to the governor's race now, we noted that PolitiFact has been dinging Tim Michaels on his claims about parole, and we wanted to follow up the latest on that, because parole has become, you know, perhaps the issue for the Tim Michaels campaign. They really want to hit on whether Tony Evers has been, you know, releasing dangerous criminals en masse out into the streets. Here's a hint: he has not. but they are trying to make the most of it. And PolitiFact has finally jumped on the case here and noted that while governors get to appoint a parole commission chair, the other members are not a political appointee. And it's worth remembering that parole releases have been going on both under Republican and Democratic governors. In fact, PolitiFact notes that during Scott Walker's two terms as governor, the parole commission released 1,397 people through both discretionary and mandatory parole. After one term under Tony Evers, that number is 895. Not 1,000, as claimed by Michaels. How many were violent offenders at the time that they were sentenced? 593 under Evers, 744 under Walker. And about half of those released fell into the discretionary category, same as about Walker. And we also want to make sure we point out the difference between parole and pardon. There is very much a difference in that Scott Walker issued zero pardons as governor, and Tony Evers has issued hundreds of pardons. And that is a good thing. That is the thing that has saved taxpayers money continuing to monitor those who have long since paid their debt to society. They're not in prison. They're out. They have made a new life for themselves. But perhaps they're applying for some kind of professional license, and they can't because of a felony conviction a long, long time ago. By issuing a pardon for people who have long since been released from prison, it is a way for state government to say, all right, you have applied. We have reviewed things very carefully, and it is clear that you have, you know, made something of yourself, and so we now issue this pardon. That Scott Walker could not bring himself to issue a single pardon during his time as governor is remarkably telling. It tells you about somebody that can be one or both of these, either incredibly cold-hearted or incredibly self-aware that he might run for some other office and does not want to be dinged in the way that Tim Michaels is attempting to damage Tony Evers. Again, not one time in 8 years did Scott Walker review somebody who'd been out of prison for years and years and say to them, here is a pardon from the state so that you can further your life by no longer having, you know, this mark on your record. As you move forward and try to better yourself, your family, and your circumstances. Not one out of Scott Walker. Tony Evers has done hundreds. And of course, here in a newsroom, you see the press releases. And so while I don't have a single place for you to necessarily go to read them, I would say you can find the stories out there. And I think they're worthwhile to share what people have done over the years since they, you know, stole a car when they were 18, and you know, now they're in their 40s and they wanted to do something different. And you know, should that felony conviction for that thing you did at 18 really hamper the rest of your life if you have truly been reformed? I recall we were looking to recruit somebody to run for a seat in the legislature, and this person was amazing. Person would have been an incredible state lawmaker, far better than the caliber of the person that was representing that area at that time. And at the very last moment, this person came to us somewhat tearfully and said they can't run. We said, well, why not? You know, what's the problem? And they said, I'd forgotten because it was so long ago. He was whatever it was, 18, 19, 20 years old. And I think it was a tractor that he stole and, you know, went for a little joyride and of course got arrested. And I mean, it wasn't any kind of a violent offense whatsoever. Obviously still deserved a penalty. And, you know, he did pay some kind of a penalty, I assume some time behind bars if it's a felony conviction. But all these many years later to have what happened back when you were, you know, still a teenager, basically, keep you from serving your community is just a shame. And so I'm glad that we're making people a little bit more clear on the differences between parole and pardon, and that we're making clear that parole is not something a governor hands out willy-nilly. It's, again, by a parole commission that reviews each circumstance. But in other cases, that parole is mandatory because it was part of their original prison sentence. You have to abide by that, especially if you describe yourself as, you know, law and order. We'll wrap up this hour's conversation in a bit. You're up north. It's a Tuesday morning, October 25th for Up North News. I'm Pat Kreitlow. And by the way, if you didn't hear the news yesterday, we are moving. Our 8 to 11 visits, our little coffee breaks here have been wonderful. But it's time for us to become breakfast buddies instead. So starting next Monday, we will be moving to 6 a.m. We will be taking the 6 to 8 slot. Matt Flynn is taking a break, and you will be hearing him at another time period before much longer. And we thank him so much for being willing to take the early shift for all that time. And now it'll be our turn here at Up North News to visit with you from 6 to 8 in the morning on your favorite local, your new favorite local radio station as part of Civic Media, as we continue to add more stations around Wisconsin. But whether you're listening in Wausau, Amory, Oshkosh, Wisconsin Rapids, Richland Center, Waukesha, Madison, we are just pleased as punch to have you here. And again, hope you'll join us as well when we make the move over to 6 a.m.
And for those of you who may be Matt Flynn direct listeners, his show will be moving to 3 p.m. still every weekday, still live, still direct, as he says. But 3 p.m. is the new time for that one.
All right. Sounds good. And our apologies. We've had some technical difficulties with Rick Smith trying to get him connected. If we can still get him connected either this segment or in the next hour. I see him coming online right now. So we might actually get in a couple of minutes before we take our break at the top of the hour. And then we'll continue our look at some other Wisconsin news and headlines and, other little news and notes that we can find for you. So while we wait for Rick to make that connection, I'm going to remind you one more time that if you want to reach the show, our phone number is 715-388-7155. And our email address is radio@upnorthnewswi.com. Again, radio@upnorthnewswi.com. Thing that always trips people up when they go looking for us is they forget the WI. So Up North News WI, if you're searching for us on social media, upnorthnewswi.com is the website. I believe Rick Smith is joining us now. Rick, you there?
Yeah, how are we doing today, Pat?
Hey, very good, thanks. Nice to see you. Nice to hear from you. Our apologies for the technical mix-up there, but we got you now. And, I mean, you're the one who's been... I don't even know where your body clock is. You go from Pennsylvania time to Central time to traveling around, the Midwest in an RV and meeting up with all of us, local radio guys. And this is from somebody that's, you're still doing third shift overnights as a trucker most of the time, aren't you?
Yeah. Well, it's one of the things that we do. It's part of my passion doing radio, but yeah, I'm a local regional truck driver.
And that to me is just really telling. You and I had one thing in common when we visited last week. I've told people previously that the 2004 election was pretty much my breaking point. That was the era of the Swift boat ads and everything. And I couldn't keep pretending, that both sides were equal when I knew that there was more that had to be said about who's really behind a lot of the monkey business in politics. And now, Rick, here you are. You said in 2004, you too just kind of had this moment, kind of a fork in the road. What was that like for you?
Yeah, I mean, you looked at that election and I was amazed that we ended up where we were, but I had taken a job transfer to a culturally very different rural area. And, you know, most of my truck driver buddies weren't thinking about things the way I was. And talk radio was the place where they were getting their news, their information, and a lot of the, well, misinformation. So I decided that, you know, hey, we need to balance the airwaves and balance the thought process. And one of the things that we did is we started a little talk radio program that's grown into, well, what we do now.
And so in doing that, you know, what were the things that you were, what kinds of things were you hearing where you said, you know, somebody's got to counter that because that's just, it sounds easy. It fits on a bumper sticker, but it's just not true.
Yeah. Well, look, you know, I had a person who came to me and said, you know, I've been a Teamster for over 30 years. And, you know, I give credit to my Teamster union card. The reason that, you know, as growing up in a housing project, as a young kid, I now live in a neighborhood with doctors and lawyers. I give my union, you know, some credit for that. They negotiated the best wages and benefits that I could get doing the work that I do. But I had truck driver buddies going, you know, we'd make more money here if there was no union here. Things would be better here. We'd have better conditions. And you go, where is that possible? You know, where in this world is that happening? And it's not. But it's what they were being told, and it was being reinforced, you know, morning to night as they're listening to radio, because they only heard one side of a story. And it's like anything. If you only hear one side of something, eventually you're going to start believing that. Even if it's 100% wrong and it's all the wrong direction, eventually you're going, just by osmosis, you're going to learn into this stuff. So I decided, you know, look, we've got to balance this. And we've had these conversations. And some of those guys that, you know, originally have come around to reality and said, you know, maybe you're right. And I think this is where we have to have balance in the airwaves. I think you have to have both sides of every argument and to be able to give people the information they need.
And that to me is when I thought about, you know, talking with you today, where I thought, you know, there's so much of an attitude, a dialogue in media and in politics about being pro-business. You know, Scott Walker liked to say Wisconsin was open for business, and it was, you know, you heard everything about business. And without trying to couch it as like every business is bad, but, you know, certainly not every business is good. My point is it's always about business. And yep. We so rarely hear about the worker, the person, the employee. We occasionally talk about, you know, workplace safety or, you know, so-and-so is on strike, but we don't really have a talking point about being good to the men and women who are working for us.
No, absolutely. And it's one of these things where I used to work for a company who used to tout the fact that they had a 1% turnover rate because the wages and conditions that the workers had made people stay. You look now, you know, the companies who aren't having massive turnover problems, those are the companies who have, you know, good wages and benefits. Those are usually union companies. So for me, you know, there should be a partnership between labor and corporations, because I think they both, on certain veins, want the same stuff. Companies want to be profitable. I want the companies to be profitable. And you go, well, why, Rick? Why would you care if they're profitable? Because when we sit down and negotiate, if they're profitable, we get better wages, hours, conditions. At the end of the day, that's what we should be fighting for. But, you know, it comes down to who gets what. And right now, we've got CEOs in corporate America who say, we want it all, and workers should get nothing. And I think we're seeing some pushback on that right now. I think you're seeing a lot of unionizing and a lot of activity.
Isn't it? It's just so surprising to me, I guess. It shouldn't be. But, you know, Reaganism and Reaganomics, I thought would have been so thoroughly discredited by now, the whole notion of trickle down. And yet it seems to be built into, you know, a big part of the American political DNA.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I've been trickled down enough. They told me it was going to be rivers of gold and honey. It's been yellow. But it hasn't been honey.
No, it has not. Rick, can you stick around after the news break here for a bit more?
Absolutely.
All right. We'd love that. Rick Smith from The Rick Smith Show is going to talk to us more on the other side of the news break. We'll get more into his radio show and what he's been hearing as part of his Midwestern tour, and also some of the work that he's been doing with folks right here as part of Civic Media and in talking to people all around Wisconsin, letting them know that there are other voices out there that we're bringing to radio stations that previously did not have this kind of voice. It's long overdue to have more Rick Smiths out there, and we're so pleased to have them with us this morning. So we'll take this break. We'll be back in just a little bit. You're up north.